Hans-Ulrich Gumbrecht is a professor of literature at Stanford University. He's also the author of the book, In Praise of Athletic Beauty. In his book, Gumbrecht introduces a new aesthetic of sports, based on the German philosopher Immanuel Kant's definition of beautiful, as Gumbrecht told Steve Paulson.
The beautiful produces the impression of having a function without having a function. It has no everyday function. I mean, if you hit a home run, it has a function within the game, but it has no everyday function. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a pro, it doesn't make your life any better. And yet, the movement that you see produces the impression that everything is shaped by a function, or you can apply that to other sports, gymnastics and so forth. I mean, clearly what you do on a parallel bar routine has no function. And once again, it doesn't make society better, life better. Doesn't increase your income if you do some form well, if you produce some form well, and yet it produces this impression of functionality without having a function. That's the paradox. Right? Mm-hmm.
Now, are you applying the same kinds of standards of aesthetics to sports as we might to, let's say, looking at a great painting or going to a jazz
concert? Yeah, that is the let's say the key provocation of my book, to say that the basic enjoyment and what attracts people to go to games, and my claim would be that this is more basic and stronger than your team winning or losing, and we can talk about that later on, is actually aesthetic experience. Now, I'm not saying, A, that it is any important for people to be aware of that. I mean, you don't even have to be aware of that when you enjoy a painting, right? You can just mm-hmm. enjoy it, and sometimes I think it's counterproductive to be too aware of it and to talk too much about it. And secondly, certainly many sports spectators, I mean, especially for the big team sports, would probably resent if you told them that what drives them is aesthetic experience. I mean, that certainly goes for European soccer crowds or South American soccer crowds. Those people would not like to hear, the fans of Manchester United, to tell them that this aesthetic experience that drives them.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over too well.
Would not like that. No. So nor am I preaching that they have to know it. It was really started out as my own question, and I wasn't terribly biased. I mean, to your radio station and to God that I wasn't trying to find out something terribly sophisticated. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more convincing I find that. And while my Wisconsin colleague Hans Adler, who is a great Kant specialist, just over lunch made me a compliment that he likes the Kant part of my book, I'm neither known as a great Kant fan nor as a great Kant specialist. It turned out that this was, among all the things I read up for that book, philosophical things, the definition of the aesthetic judgment that I found the most appropriate for Kant. I mean, and Kant, biographically, is grotesquely far away from sports. I mean, he was dwarfish, he had a hunchback. The only thing he was interested in as a hobby horse was punctuality and preparing mustard, so sport is certainly not something that ever crossed his mind.
What are some of the great moments of beauty that you see in sports, being a sports fan yourself? I mean, give me some examples of,
I mean,
of where this
concrete examples,
really...
yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's start with American college sports, which at this point of my life is my main emphasis. I mean, mainly American college football. So remember, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I mean, there is no NCAA championship in American football, but it was the game between University of Texas and USC.
Sure,
and
of course, it came down in the last
with
minute.
With my own team rooting for US, I mean, being Pac-10, I was rooting for USC, which is our arch rival, but I wanted USC to win. And then remember, it was Vince Young. So it was 4th and 11 or something like that. And, I mean, given the quality of the USC defense, it looked after the first three downs, he had just no chance. Yeah, and then at 4th down, in this very improbable situation, I saw, and lots of people saw, this strange, I mean, I call it in the book, angelical smile on his face. And then 4th down comes, and he walks through the defense as if everything was in slow motion, and scores this amazingly beautiful touchdown.
All the dreams, all the hopes for the national championship come down to this play. Young from the shotgun. Back to throw. Vince looks under pressure. He'll tuck it in, run. Vince to the 5. Young, touchdown Texas. Touchdown Vince Young. He's done it again. Vince Young has given the Longhorns the lead with 19 seconds to play in the game.
So that is a moment that I remember. Now, as we're talking American football and USC, you may have seen the big sensation in college football this year, namely us, Stanford, beating USC at Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was overjoyed because it was our normally not so successful team. But there were two fourth down situations. And in that case, there were two amazing catches by young receivers with a quarterback who was starting the first time that day. But, I mean, forget about the quarterbacks. I mean, it was the combination between an improbability of that to happen and an event, because these three fourth downs I was talking about were events, I mean, completely unexpected, where in the moment that it happened, it felt like it was necessary. There was no alternative. That's what I wanted to describe about Vince Young with the smile. It was like, I'm not claiming he knew about it, but all of a sudden, there was this perfect situation.
Just to go back to that game, okay, with Vince Young, I remember that because I consider that one of the greatest college football games ever played. No, I mean,
game was fantastic.
Yeah, well, it was the national championship. Yeah. This was the very end of the game, so there was a huge amount at stake, and two wonderful teams, two undefeated teams.
Absolutely. It was a great, great game. Yeah.
And it was one person who rose to the moment. I guess, I mean, I'm a big sports fan myself, and I mean, it's Vince Young just taking the whole thing on his back.
Yeah.
And as you say, it was as if he was operating at a different plane than the USC defense.
And the first
defense.
Three downs was the obvious thing. You can't just not walk the USC defense, right?
Right.
And then that fourth down, all of a sudden, you know, was unbelievable. I'm going to give you another one to go a little bit down in history, in American history, and staying with African-American athletes. Part of how I got into sports was my father, who was actually a very good athlete, was a major league soccer player. Well, okay, something like major league soccer player. Telling me how he had watched as a 16-year-old, unfortunately Hitler Youth, but he got the privilege, so they sent them to the Olympic Games at Berlin. And my father, who had, you know, being a typical German of his generation, you couldn't accuse him for having an exaggerated sympathy for African-Americans or things like that. But the way he talked about that afternoon when Jesse Owens won 3 gold medals, and about he talked about that 100-meter dash, and about that long jump competition, which I think was the second time that Owens was doing long jump, and then there was this amazing world record, 8.14 meters. And there's a similar effect when you see the footage in this famous movie on Olympia by Leni Riefenstahl. Mm-hmm. There is a similar smile, and this is not always the smile, but it is interesting as a point of convergence on Jesse Owens' face, almost as if he was apologetic for being so superior, like saying, oh, you know, I'm not wanting to do that. It just happens to me. And for me, and that applies also to this Vince Young moment that we both appreciate, you get the feeling when you see Owens run that there's something that runs him. Yeah, I mean, it is there's a grace, that's another word that matters to me, that seems to come from the fact it doesn't seem to be an effort. It doesn't seem to be intentional. You get the feeling. I'm not getting theological here, but you get the feeling that there's something greater, higher, that runs them, that gives them the intuition to perform the way they perform. And it is interesting in that sense that for all we know, the great Panhellenic Games of Greek antiquity were celebrated and were religious events because the spectators, not many spectators, thought that what the athletes did could only be explained through a physical presence of gods, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, so I don't believe that Vince Young was physically helped by some god, but yes, the impression is very plausible.
Well, it's striking to hear your description of this. I mean, sort of doing something that's very difficult without seeming to exert too much effort. I mean, that's often the definition that, say, jazz musicians use to describe cool.
Yes.
You know, it's just sort of, you know, it's almost as if you're doing this incredibly difficult thing, but it doesn't look like it's you're trying so hard.
Well, and in most cases, of course, we all know that both for jazz music or classical music or for sports, it presupposes an infinity of hours invested into that.
Right.
And
yet, all that practice, all the experience that goes into that moment.
Yeah, but all this effort seems to be, even practically, a condition for the possibility of being able to afford this effortlessness when it matters. To talk of a completely different sport, I'm very proud. I have an advisee, a sophomore at Stanford, who is now the second fastest in the world at 200 meters butterfly, a young woman. And I saw her at the meet, swim meet, Stanford against Berkeley, where she broke the American record. And the second best swimmer in the nation is actually from Berkeley. So they have this cross across the Bay of San Francisco rivalry. And she was way behind after 150 meters. And then she came back in this last 50 meters. And I said, you know, Elaine, how did it happen? And she said, well, you know, I couldn't tell you. I mean, it presupposed a lot of practice. I knew at the turn at 150 that I would win. But there was, that's the expression, there was something that carried me, and you could see that. I mean, once again, not the hand of God, but the way she was in the water, she was almost flying the last 50, I mean, the last stretch was something. So that is something that I think you could find in any type of event, although I then make quite dramatic differences between different types of events. I mean, it's a temptation to have just one formula and apply that to everything, right. I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me pursue this analogy mm-hmm. between sports and religion. Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying that these athletes are not, you know, you're not trying to suggest.
I mean, I don't mind anybody saying God helps them. It's fine with me. Only that's not sure. the way I see it.
But I mean, it's interesting that you raise that analogy because a lot of people look at, especially rabid sports fans who, I mean, it almost seems like they worship their sports teams or their favorite athletes.
Oh, they do.
And, you know, I'm wondering how far we can push that analogy between sports and religion.
Well, I mean, in general, this is more a general statement of somebody working in the humanities. I have a certain resistance against saying X is today's religion because A, they're just, if you are in the humanities, there are too many things that people refer to this way. And B, I mean, in our country above all, but now increasingly internationally, I mean, religion is not as dead and gone as people had thought. So, I mean, you could say the religion of the 21st century is religion and not sports or theater or jazz music or pop music, you name it. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I don't want to push the analogy too far, but I do think that there is an interesting convergence rather than analogy, because analogy would always be a comparison, a convergence between a certain type of aesthetic experience and religious experience, and that is best characterized by the literal meaning of the word transcendence. I mean, something is happening that goes not only beyond your imagination, beyond your expectation. Something is happening that you didn't believe was possible before you saw it. I mean, this is what I was saying. You know, with the first three downs with this Vince Young example we started with, that seemed to be the plausible thing. You cannot walk through this SC defense. They're just too good. And then all of a sudden it happens, and it does not happen barely. It happens as if it was the absolutely necessary thing to happen, right? Hmm. And in that sense, you know, as we're just talking about walking on water, to refer to the New Testament, or something like ascension or resurrection. I mean, these, of course, are things, whether you believe in them or not, that the people who wrote the gospel were believing had happened. Some of them were even pretending that they had eyewitnessed them. And that were, in the very same sense, transcendental. Namely, right. Not only beyond your expectation, beyond what you believed was possible, but beyond the realm of the limit of what you can rationally and plausibly explain.
And it's almost the definition of sacred experience,
yes,
that,
yes.
that it takes you beyond ordinary experience. I mean, that's, I guess, another word for transcendence.
No, absolutely. That's we could agree on the sacred.
Hans-Ulrich Gumbrecht is the author of In Praise of Athletic Beauty. He spoke with Steve Paulson.